This is the Daily Signal podcast for Tuesday, March 26th. I'm Virginia Allen. ISIS has taken responsibility for a terrorist attack in Russia on Friday that left almost 140 people dead. But Russian President Vladimir Putin is placing at least some of the blame on Ukraine, it appears. Now, Ukraine has denied any involvement in the attack. So what might this mean for the future of the war between Russia and Ukraine? And how were terrorists able to carry out this attack in the first place in Russia? Former member of the National Security Council and director of the Center for National Defense at the Heritage Foundation, Robert Greenway, joins us in just a moment to explain more after this. Stay tuned.
For over 35 years, the Heritage Foundation Job Bank has been helping conservatives at all professional levels find employment in key positions in Washington, D.C. and across the country. We can help you connect with positions in the administration, on Capitol Hill, in public policy organizations, and in the private sector. To learn more about the Heritage Foundation Job Bank, go to heritage.org/job-bank.
We are joined now by Heritage Foundation's Robert Greenway, prior to his service on the National Security Council, where he coordinated and implemented U.S. government policy for all Middle East and North Africa. Robert also served as a senior intelligence officer at the Defense Intelligence Agency. He's also a veteran of the United States Army Special Forces with 6 combat tours in Afghanistan and Iraq. Thank you so much for being with us today to break this down.
My pleasure. Happy to.
Walk us through what we know about the attack on Friday and how it was carried out.
So what we know right now is not an enormous amount, but 4 individuals that claim affiliation with the Islamic State in the Khorasan province, which is the Afghanistan branch of the Islamic State, claimed credit and took credit and publicized on their media outlet that they were responsible for the attack in the Crocus City Hall in northeast Moscow on Friday. These 4 men went in armed with assault rifles and shot at every single person that they could and then set the place ablaze. Right now, the casualty count is north of 130 dead and 180 wounded. The numbers are expected to climb. Probably the deadliest attack in Russia from terrorists in probably over 2 decades. And you mentioned that Vladimir Putin was blaming the Ukrainians for this. And it's reported in Russian media that they were headed for the Ukrainian border in order to escape. There's no evidence right now to point to the Ukrainians being involved in this. It is completely consistent with an ISIS attack, and there's a trend that's been moving in this direction for quite some time. And I would also state that he has every interest in doing so that he can claim an escalation, and he's resumed bombing of civilian targets in Kiev for the first time in over a year over the course of this weekend. So I think he's exploiting this terrorist attack for his own benefits in Ukraine, even though there's no visible link.
I want to dive deeper into that in just a moment. But first, I am curious, do we know how these 4 individuals got into Russia in the first place?
So what has been publicly stated is that they exploited the gap in Turkey. And so they came from the Central Asian states. They're apparently of Tajik origin. And ISIS in Afghanistan, the Khorasan province, draws a lot of Central Asian recruits into it, so not surprising. And if they're able to get them to Turkey, which they obviously have been, then they were able then to infiltrate Russian Federation. Now, we also know that there was an attack against the church that was thwarted in Istanbul in January of this year. The same time, ISIS and Khorasan claimed credit for bombing a funeral procession in Iran. So the Turkish security forces arrested some 47 individuals, but clearly the presence was there. And this presence was a springboard, apparently, to move ISIS fighters into Russia.
Okay. So in regards to Putin's comments and the relationship of how this is playing out between Russia and Ukraine, what might we expect from Russia moving forward? We've seen that as of Monday, Russia launched missiles against Kiev. That's the 3rd time that they've done so in a 5-day period. How is Russia, or will Russia, use this as an opportunity to ramp up fighting against Ukraine, even though, as you stated, there's no clear link at all to these individuals that carried out this terrorist attack in Ukraine?
None at all. And I think, again, it's not surprising that he'll exploit this towards the fight that he's currently in, mobilize and galvanize public support and direct it towards Ukraine in order to prop up what is increasingly an unpopular and unproductive effort. And so he has expanded the scale of attacks. And in fact, some of the missiles launched from Russia against the capital transited Polish airspace, which creates implications for NATO, not surprisingly. And so I think he's going to continue to exploit it. But I think it's also important to remember what caused all of this, right? The disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan by the Biden administration left us exposed. And so, the prospect then and the predictable outcome was that our terrorist adversaries in Afghanistan would exploit the $83 billion of equipment and infrastructure left behind and resurrect the capability to conduct operations abroad. And they have incrementally been doing so. And that's really what this weekend's attacks have been. I would add, too, that our open borders constitute a grave threat. So Turkey constituted a threat to allow the infiltration of ISIS fighters into Russia. Well, our open borders don't do much to dissuade them. And so we can anticipate that that is already present in the United States. Some 6,000 Afghan nationals have crossed the border of special interest aliens since January 2021. It's only a matter of time, I fear, before we are experiencing a similar level of attack in the United States.
I was at the border last week in San Diego sector and met an illegal alien who just crossed from Afghanistan. So they're certainly coming across. In regards to ISIS specifically, do you point to the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan as the sole reason of how ISIS has regained that strength? Are there other factors? Because, you know, I remember when I was in college writing a paper on how the U.S. could effectively dismantle ISIS, and it was only a couple of years later that they essentially did. It seemed like the strategy that they used worked. We heard nothing about ISIS for years, and now all of a sudden they've come up not only as a threat, but now clearly what we've seen that they did in Russia, they're a serious threat that is fully capable of carrying out serious attacks on well-secured nations.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think one of my first responsibilities coming into the White House in 2017 was to start to shift resources to the ultimate defeat of the territorial caliphate, which resulted in the destruction of the infrastructure in Iraq and Syria. They were controlling a landmass the size of Texas and all the oil resources within it, and they were self-funding, the largest terrorist state we've probably seen in history. And that was brought to a rightful defeat. And its leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, was notoriously and famously killed by U.S. troops in Syria. So the organization ceased to exist in Iraq and Syria, but their franchises, including in Afghanistan, continued. And so this is one of those issues where it's going to be a nuisance at a small state fighting for its survival, or it's going to be a threat if you allow it. When we vacated Iraq in 2011, under the Obama administration and then Vice President Biden and then General Austin as Central Command Commander, now Secretary of Defense, oversaw the withdrawal. And that created time and space and opportunity for ISIS to metastasize and to expand into a terrorist state. When we withdrew from Afghanistan in 2021, we've seen the resurrection of the capability there, not just ISIS, but also al-Qaeda and the Taliban as a whole. And so it's not surprising that these threats are going to rise to a level in which they're directly threatening Europe and now the United States.
So I guess that leads to the question of why Russia? We have a pretty good understanding of why ISIS hates the United States, but my first guess would not have been Russia to be top of their target list.
Well, I think there are two factors. First is the animus because of the way Russia treats its Muslim minorities. And so beginning with the conflict in Chechnya, some decades ago, and it has persisted where Russia is seen as perpetrating a number of different crimes against Muslim populations. And so that perception, I think, fuels it. The other is proximity and opportunity. The Russian embassy was bombed in Kabul, Afghanistan, just last year. And I think this is a trend in the same direction where they're exploiting that proximity. And so I think they've also judged they have a vulnerable target in this sense. And it is close, again, allowing Turkey to provide infiltration platform. Now, I also, though, would note that Europe is not far from it. The rest of Europe is not far from it. They've plotted attacks in Germany that were disrupted in July of 23. And we know that historically, in 2015 and 2017, this is where theaters like the one hit in Moscow and the Bataclan Theater in Paris and also the Ariana Grande concert in Manchester, England in 2017, this is a consistent trend. They seek high-profile events with large numbers of innocent civilians. And so I think their aspiration is to go beyond Russia. Russia is the beginning, is certainly not the end.
The president of France, Macron, has raised concerns as well, and he has actually put France on its highest level of awareness or highest level of threat for terrorism. Should we be concerned about more terrorist attacks in the near future, not only as you mentioned, possibly in Europe, but in the United States, I saw on Fox and I believe it was on Fox and Friends this week, Senator Marco Rubio joined the show and raised concerns about similar instances happening in the U.S. because, as you mentioned earlier, because of our open southern border.
100%. Unfortunately, FBI Director Wray testified on 5 December before Congress that everywhere he looked, he sees unprecedented threat, the likes of which we've not seen in decades. I think his language was, all the lights are blinking red. That's a direct reference back to Chapter 8 of the 9/11 Commission Report, which is blinking red, which was the indicators before the 9/11 attacks that were seen by those paying attention, that this was a trend that was moving towards and in the direction of attacking the United States. And then just a few weeks ago, the Central Command Commander General Michael Corella testified before Congress that the capability to conduct and plan external operations from Afghanistan is well underway. And then within at least up to 6 months, we can expect them to plan and attempt to conduct operations against the United States. And I think that's what we're watching in real time.
Mm. I want to circle back to another reason why Russia may have been a target for ISIS. This has been something that I've heard other folks talk about and wanted to get your take on it. So there's a region in Africa called the Sahel region, and Russia has been spreading its influence there, but we've also seen a lot of Islamic radical activity in that same region. So Russia's presence is a threat to that Islamic activity there. And some point out that this could have been a possible motive for why ISIS attacked Russia. Do you think that there's weight to that?
I think it's a contributing factor. Mm-hmm. I think private military corporations like the Wagner Group, now changed names since the death of its owner at the hands of Putin, have been taking common cause with a number of regimes in North Africa, including the Sahel region, which is actually the band that is just south of the Sahara Desert. But they've been active on both sides of it. The Sudan is another case in point where the presence of Russian paramilitary organizations have been working to oppress Muslim populations and engage in counterterrorism. So I think that that is a contributing factor, but I wouldn't say it would be determinative.
Has ISIS given any indication that we can tell, that we can say is concrete as to where and when their next target might be?
No. Its motive means an opportunity, and they have the motivation to do this. They've been given the opportunity and the means in the resurrection of a terrorist sanctuary in Afghanistan. And in some cases elsewhere, we've taken our sort of eye off the ball and our pressure off of terrorist groups, shifting our attention elsewhere. We know that they see the United States as being responsible for supporting and assisting all the states that directly oppose them. So they have not, I think, deterred from the fact that the United States is the principal adversary. And I think it's just a matter of developing the capability. But again, opening our southern borders has given them access that they have never had before. And it is going to be, I think, a rude surprise to see how they managed to exploit it. I would not expect that we might not have 6 months before they're able to attempt to conduct an attack in the United States.
How should the U.S. proceed here? And you know, when we're talking about eliminating a threat that we know is a threat to the United States, but obviously has not directly attacked us this year that the public is aware of. What should be the stance of the U.S. and the Biden administration to work towards preemptively eliminating that threat?
Yeah. In fact, the last attack conducted by this group against the United States was the bombing at Abbey Gate, where 13 Americans were killed. Mm-hmm. This is the same group that we encountered during the disastrous withdrawal from Kabul. I think, fortunately, we know what it takes to bring terrorist groups to the brink of extermination. We've done this with al-Qaeda. We've done it before with ISIS and other groups. So we know what the successful policies are and the practices. I think when we focus our time and attention on terrorist groups, we succeed. When we distract ourselves and we feed and appease terrorist groups as a matter of policy, as we've done with Iran, the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism, and return sanctuaries we've done in Afghanistan, then the consequences are equally dire. I think the answer here is to return to those policies. I also think, as we talked about, closing the border is an absolute necessity, if for no other reason than to prevent the access that allows terrorist groups to infiltrate fighters and capabilities and resources into the United States to conduct attacks. That has to be done, and coordination amongst partners and allies, because it is a collective effort required in order to do this. But the reality is that good policies eliminate terrorists and their sanctuary. Bad policies restore capability to terrorists. That's what we're seeing right now.
Does this attack mean anything moving forward for the relationship between Russia and the United States? Obviously, tension is high between Russia and the U.S. right now with the war in Ukraine. But as the expression goes, enemy of my enemy can be my friend. Would there be some sort of change in strategic relationship opportunity for Russia and the United States to strategically together target ISIS?
Well, it's interesting because in this instance and in the attack in Iran in January, the United States, by its own admission, provided intelligence or information to both nations, even though they're adversaries, indicating that the attack would likely. The Iranians apparently took it to a certain extent seriously. No government officials were killed, but civilians were. They managed not to prevent them from going to the funeral in Kerman. But in Moscow, they were apparently ignored. I think there is common cause to be made, but it has definitive limits because at the core of it, we are pursuing completely opposed strategic objectives with both Tehran, for example, and certainly with Russia. But at the same time, I think that there is areas where these convergences exist and you have to exploit them. But I do think in the provision of information, it's not unreasonable to expect some reciprocity. We asked for and got nothing from Iran. In fact, they've been attacking us nonstop ever since. And we asked for, apparently, and got nothing from the government in Moscow. In fact, they're holding a number of U.S. citizens, including Wall Street Journal reporter Gershkovitz, still. So we're not getting a level of respect or a level of reciprocity in providing this intelligence. But to your point, we can, we have, and we should make common cause where necessary. But we have to be focused ourselves and not expect that someone else is going to do this for us.
What kind of language are we seeing from Russian state media? We've heard the comments from President Putin in Russia, but how is Russia's media covering this situation?
Well, so this is an embarrassment, right, to have an attack at this level take place in your country. And so for a dictator like Putin, he is trying to salvage his image. And it is, again, not surprising he's pointing to Ukraine and the United States and Western European countries for supporting and enabling this to attack in the first place and directing public ire appropriately or inappropriately, I should say, in the wrong direction, distracting it from ISIS. So I think we haven't seen a helpful response from Moscow yet. It's not a surprise. And again, they ignored the warnings. And I think they've galvanized that public support in order to escalate in Ukraine, which is terribly unfortunate. Again, I think it's bad policy on our part to allow this to take place.
Anything you'd like to add? Final thoughts here.
No, other than I think, again, the fact that we've seen from a number of different government officials that the level of threat to the United States from terrorist attack has not been at this level for decades. And I think we need to take that extremely seriously. And I think the pressure needs to be brought to bear in order to close our border and close these threats and to take the threat of terrorism more seriously.
Heritage Foundation's Robert Greenway. You can follow Robert Greenway and his work at the Heritage Foundation website. That's heritage.org. Thank you again for your time today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
With that is going to do it for today's episode. Thanks so much for being with us here on the Daily Signal podcast. If you have not had the chance, make sure that you check out our evening show. It's right here in this same podcast feed where we bring you the top news of the day. Also, make sure that you hit that subscribe button so you never miss out on our new shows. And also, if you would, take a minute to leave us a 5-star rating and review. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you right back here around 5 p.m. for our top news edition.
The Daily Signal podcast is brought to you by more than 500,000 members of the Heritage Foundation. Executive producers are Rob Bluey and Kate Trinko. Producers are Virginia Allen and Samantha Asheris. Sound design by Lauren Evans, Mark Guiney, and John Popp. To learn more, please visit dailysignal.com.